Hi, I'm Mike Sklenz, and this is Nintendo World Report's Connectivity Podcast, Episode 95, Mother Mother. We've got two segments for you this week. First up is a discussion of digital game pricing with JP, Nick, and Alex. And in our second segment, myself, Scott, Andy, and Patrick talk about games we've been playing recently. Enjoy the episode.
Hello and welcome to this segment on digital games pricing. I'm Nicholas Bray and I'm here with JP Corbin.
Hello.
And Alex Calafi.
Hey guys.
Okay guys, so this discussion was sort of brought on by some of the talk surrounding the price of Earthbound on the Virtual Console recently. And so I just wanted to talk a bit about the different pricing structures and what our general thoughts are on the prices of Nintendo games online. So, JP, do you want to start with some of your general buying habits in regards to the digital storefronts?
Yeah, at least when it comes to Nintendo and also most other places, but especially with Nintendo, for the last almost a year, really since they started doing it, I have almost exclusively bought games digitally on Nintendo platforms.
Right, and Alex, what's your buying habits like?
Well, I am one of those guys who doesn't have a problem with digital games, but when I can, I always prefer getting a physical copy. Like with Animal Crossing, even though it's one of my favorite Nintendo series, I couldn't get it at midnight no matter how much my heart told me I wanted to. I really wanted to get a physical copy. But when it's with smaller games, like let's say Runner 2 or whatever, I have no problem getting that the first day out.
Well, you don't have a choice in that one either, really.
Well, yeah.
I'm the same.
The only place where I really differ on this is with VC games, which I'm sure we'll obviously talk about soon. But it's sometimes tough to justify those purchases.
So you guys don't have a problem with paying the same price as a physical release as for the digital release, like on new games? Like, I know you don't buy new digital releases, Alex, but JP does, so.
Yeah, I mean, like, for me, it would have to be substantially cheaper for me to even consider buying a physical copy. I really like having all my games in one place, having the convenience of that, having everything, you know, organized that way.
I'm
willing to pay more for the digital copy than the physical copy. I mean, the physical copy would have to be a lot cheaper for me to really consider it.
I was very close to getting the digital Animal Crossing, but in the end I ended up getting a physical copy of it. Wasn't really any reason other than my girlfriend actually ended up buying it for me, and I bought her copy like a few weeks before that. So,
I think my biggest problem with purchasing full digital games on Nintendo systems, because on my Vita, I have no problem getting a game the first day digital because I feel some sort of security. My PSN, I know that I have full access to those games regardless of what happens to my PS3 or Vita. With Nintendo, because there's no real account structure, it's going to be a pain in the ass to have any security with any digital games I buy until they can set something up.
Yeah. I mean, I can see that criticism. I understand where people are coming from with that. But it's like buying on the eShop isn't as secure as say PSN or Xbox Live or Steam or something, and it should be. I mean, like, they should be working toward an account system, but I would say it's no less secure than having a physical copy, because, you know, something could happen to your system and that would be bad, or something could happen to the games that you own that are physical games and that would be bad. So I don't think it's that much more secure to buy a physical copy. I mean, like PSN, Xbox, you know, Steam, that's more secure because you can just download that again whenever. But I don't see it as much of a difference when you're talking in relation to physical copies.
Well, no, it's definitely valid in a sense, but I have to disagree to an extent, because let's say I lose my 3DS and I have a copy of Animal Crossing in it. I lose that copy of Animal Crossing, that physical copy. You're absolutely right. And in that sense, there's no difference if I buy the digital version. However, if I have 25 digital games on my 3DS, I lose all of those at the exact same time. While if I have 25 physical copies, I only lose one copy of a game I own.
Yeah, you lose what you have with you or with that. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I can agree with that. I mean,
I just think it's a little bit safer, at least in my personal opinion.
It's a little bit, but it's not, you know, it's not nearly as safe as, you know, what you're talking about with PSN. Yeah, on my Vita and PS3 and stuff, I buy a lot of stuff digitally, and it's nice to just, at any time, if something happened, I could just replace the system and re-download everything, which, I mean, Nintendo should be working toward.
Definitely.
Hey, in regards to the Wii U, JP, do you buy all of those digitally as well?
Yes, I don't currently own a disc game for the Wii U.
Okay, one of the reasons I play won't end up getting any digital games, retail digital games on the Wii U is due to the file sizes. It'll take ages for me to get it. So that's not a problem with you? Like, you just put it on overnight or whatever?
It doesn't take that long, and I mean, you can, I like with the Wii U, you can download stuff in the background, so I could just go play something else while the new game downloads. And, you know, my internet connection's pretty decent, so it takes, you know, a few hours usually, but, right. I mean, I could do other things, I can play other Wii U games, so that's not a huge issue for me.
Okay, so Alex, would you be more likely to buy digital retail games if the price was $10 cheaper day one?
Yes, but that $10 I don't think is comparable to the account system. Like, the account system is one thing I really need before I can start comfortably buying digital games. And that's just on a personal level. I have nothing against other people doing the same. But obviously, if something's $10 cheaper, I'm more apt to buy it than if it's $10 more expensive.
Mm.
Actually, okay, on that front, Nick, I just wanted to ask you quickly. So you live in Australia, right?
Yep.
So games are obviously a bit more expensive there. So I was wondering if you're sort of turned off to the whole digital thing, because obtaining physical copies, if you really need to, is generally probably going to be a bit less expensive, isn't it?
It can be. Like, a lot of the physical new releases on Nintendo over here at retail can launch at, like, you know, a fair bit cheaper than the normal price. Like, I think stuff like New Super Mario Bros. 2 and Animal Crossing and stuff, they're coming out at $48 instead of the retail price of, like, $59 or $69 or something. So buying those would be...
I can understand being reluctant to do it in that case. Now, like I said, given that scenario, I would probably still buy the digital copy because I really want it to be digital, and I'm actually willing to pay more for the digital copy if I have to. But, you know, I can see that being a turn-off to most people.
Yeah, and, you know, like, all the digital games, like, VC-related are a little more expensive as well than elsewhere in the world, I guess. Like, the conversion's skews a bit higher or something.
I think, like, VC...
Earthbound's $13 here.
I think VC is just such more a gray area as what's a fair price and what isn't. Compared to, like, if in America, you either get New Super Mario Bros. U for $60 digitally, or you get it for $60 physically. But on VC's case, getting a game for $5 might be too much for some. Especially me. I'm definitely in that camp.
I buy a fair few virtual console games. Like, I don't have a problem with spending $9 on Link's Awakening or stuff like that. Like, anything, $10, you know, isn't really a big turn off to me. The only time I've sort of held off recently on buying a digital game from the eShop was with Harmonite. It's $20. And it's just like just crossed my threshold. Like if it was 15, I probably would have owned it already.
Yeah. I mean, with Virtual Console, I like what Nintendo's doing with the Game Boy games on the 3DS Virtual Console, where there's a variable pricing. It may not be that variable, but games even on the same platform can come out for different prices. And, I mean, maybe that's what they're starting with Earthbound on the Wii U. Maybe we'll see games, like, cheaper than the old prices. And if so, then I applaud this decision. Because, you know, there are games that, Super Metroid is absolutely worth $8. But there are a lot of games on the Super Nintendo that have been released on the Wii Virtual Console that would be kind of a ripoff at $8, I would say. So hopefully they're using this as an opportunity to introduce a more varied price structure.
But with with game quality, I do like that you use game quality to determine how much a game is worth. That's definitely the right thing to do. I do wonder if, well, I personally have trouble accepting the idea that Earthbound is a Super Nintendo game, which usually costs, what, $8? And they're charging $10 just because. That kind of bothers me. Yes, it's an RPG. Yes, it's popular. It's supposedly amazing. And I've never personally played through
it. It's incredibly rare. I think that the rarity of it is a big part of it for them. You can't buy that game for less than $100 as a cartridge. I mean, even like a copy with no box or no manual, no anything, is over $100. And so I think Nintendo's just taking this as an opportunity to say, well, if you want a copy of this, you're going to pay extra, even though it's a lot less than what you'd pay. As opposed to sometimes like Super Mario Brothers on the NES, you're paying $5 for that on the Virtual Console, even though you could probably get a cartridge of it for less than a dollar. So, sometimes it's about game quality, but sometimes it's about, you know, relation to how much you would be paying physically. And Earthbound is kind of a special case.
Right. No, you're 100% right. But do you guys not think it's a tiny bit of a swindle that they're doing that? It's a swindle they can easily justify, but still a bit of a swindle to me.
Like, I think it's a swindle if we don't also see games coming out for less than that. If they really go and really start to do variable pricing, if something, I can't think of something on the Super Nintendo off the top of my head, but going down to NES, something like Ice Climber, if that came out for $3 instead of $5, well, then it's much more, I mean, it's still kind of a stretch for some people, but it's a much better deal. And if we started seeing things like that, then I can accept Earthbound being $10.
Yeah. See, yeah, I can accept Earthbound being like more expensive. That's just what they've judged the market will be willing to pay for it.
Oh, and it absolutely will. I mean, people have been demanding this game forever. People will pay.
Exactly.
People may not like it, but they will pay $10 for it.
But I also agree with you. Pricing Earthbound higher than the average Super Nintendo game that they've established hopefully will lead to them releasing games that are lower than the normal standard price. You know, it'd be good to have some Super Nintendo games that are $6 or $5.
Yeah.
On the 3DS, I've bought a few Game Boy games that were a bit cheaper, like $3.50 or $4 or something.
The low-end Game Boy games on the American eShop, the low-end Game Boy games are $3. They're either like Game Boy games are $3 or $4, Game Boy Color $5 and $6, you know, depending on the game. And I think they should expand upon that and move that into the console, virtuals console as well.
They do need to do that. Like with the NES games, I think what they should do is just put out stuff like the Balloon Fight, Ice Climber, all those really early NES games, and just put them up there for $2. Like they're not going to lose too much off those titles, and it might entice people just to buy it because it's $2. Like,
yeah, I mean, like, I have zero issue with paying $5 for Super Mario Brothers 3. Like, that's an amazing game that's worth $5 to me. But there's a lot of stuff on the Virtual Console on the Wii that is not worth $5. That should not be that expensive.
But then it comes down to, like, some games might be worth $5 to some people, but some aren't. Like, the same game might be worth less to someone else. Like, how does Nintendo gauge that? Like, do they just check out reviews and do some research?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how they're going to do this. And honestly, I don't really expect them to do this to any real extent. I think they charged an extra couple bucks for Earthbound because of how much people wanted it, and they figured people would pay it. And I think people have paid it. I know I did. So, I think there's a good chance this is a one-time thing for Nintendo just because of the situation this is in. But I would really hope that they would consider, you know, taking steps like we've talked about here.
I think one thing I have a problem with this whole VC thing is that I'm not going to say any of us pirate. I'm not going to say that. I'm not even going to comment on the moral area of that. But the reality of the situation is it's insanely easy to get a copy of Earthbound, a copy of Super Mario Brothers for free in about 60 seconds if you want. Maybe 5 minutes if you look up any kind of tutorial online for how to do that. I'm not saying most of their audience is going to do that, but it's always a little bit problematic to me when they don't make any consideration for that and they just have this slightly cocky attitude of we're just going to price it at whatever we want, regardless of the reality of the market.
Well, I mean, obviously the Virtual Console is working for them. Obviously people are buying these games or else they wouldn't still be releasing them. You know, I think they sold a whole lot of copies of Super Mario Bros. 3 on the Virtual Console on the Wii. So I think there is definitely a large group of people who are willing to pay the money for these games, even though, yeah, you're right, you could go and download them in a couple of minutes and have every NES game ever made. And so I think there are just some people who want to be legal, and I think I know myself, in addition to wanting to support Nintendo in this area, I like, you know, especially now having things either on the 3DS where it's portable or on the Wii U with off TV play, which is a functionality you don't get from emulators, you know, for most things. So I like some of that you really can't get anywhere else.
No, they have the audience and they have people buying these games, obviously, because VC is definitely a very popular service. But that's just like the reason why I don't do it, because I'm not going to admit to doing any of this stuff. But I think it's Nintendo's job for if I'm going to buy any of these games, and if a lot of people are going to buy any of these games, they have to give me a good alternative to just downloading it for free. They have to give me features like off TV play, which is sometimes enough for me, that I can't get anywhere else. And I don't think they do that too often. And I don't even think they're doing it enough right now.
They're certainly doing a better job of it now. I mean, the Wii U emulators they're using are more full-featured than the ones on the Wii. Now, still, it's stuff you could get piracy, but like stuff like save states, stuff like, you know, you can remap the buttons, which are so simple to do on like PC emulators. But it's finally Nintendo's implementing that kind of stuff too, and that plus off TV play, plus the fact that games that Nintendo releases on the Virtual Console generally run exactly the way they're supposed to, exactly the way they did on the old consoles, with no bugs or glitches or anything that you will sometimes run into on PC emulators. To me, that's worth the money.
Yeah, I was playing Kirby Superstar just last night, and it looks really good on the Wii U and on the gamepad. And like, I've played that game like years and years ago, like a decade ago on an emulator, and it's just way better playing it with this like setup on the Wii U. Like, it's much, much better. It's worth the money. The emulation's perfect, so I don't really see why you'd want to like lower yourself down to emulating these games if you can get them on the Wii U.
I mean, there's always going to be people who play on emulators and who don't want to pay money for them. And I think Nintendo's kind of just of the attitude, there's like, well, those people are going to do that. and we're not, you know, no matter what they do, they're not going to be able to convert those people, so they're kind of ignoring them. And that seems to be working for them because, I mean, I think they're doing pretty well with the Virtual Console. So, I mean, there are going to be people who emulate, and I think that's going to continue to be a viable option. But, you know, as we've said, you know, there are benefits to doing it the official, legitimate way, and I think Nintendo's going to stick to that.
And I don't know, like, how would Nintendo compete against that with, like, just without just trying to lower the price to $1 a game for any game? Like, if lower all your prices down to such a low level, you're not really putting any value in the game itself. I think that's what, like, Iwata spoke about that with the race to the bottom pricing schemes that, you know, like on the App Store is like dollar games and all those other digital services have super cheap games. But at that point, are you really pricing the game and taking into consideration the quality and, you know, getting a fair price for your product?
I mean, I think Nintendo's done a lot of market research as to what people are willing to pay for these games. You know, I don't think it's... I think Nintendo has said, well, we could lower the price. We could cut the prices in half, but they don't think the sales would match it so that they would make more money that way. I don't think Nintendo came up with these prices out of thin air. I think they... I mean, they would have lowered them already if they weren't being effective. So I think they know what they're doing here in terms of pricing, in terms of what people are willing to pay.
I do think there are a lot of people, though. Like, I don't think it's just the people who will pirate everything just because they can and the people who will do everything legally just because they can. I think there are a lot of people in the middle, and I was definitely this way in high school, where if I had the money and if it was appealing to me, I would spend the money. I don't want to do things illegally by default. If I have the choice, and if it's really convenient to me, I will spend money. Now, I used to download all my music and all my movies before the subscription thing started becoming popular, but now I don't download any music or any movies illegally. I pay for Music Unlimited, and I pay for Netflix. And I'm not saying that Nintendo's solution is exactly the same thing, or it's to do a subscription-based service, but that's just one example of sort of wading off piracy by making it really appealing to all those people who are in the middle.
Yeah.
And I think I would say that's a lot of people. I don't think that's a minority.
They want to make it so people, you know, like, so it's just a better experience. And I think, you know, to some people, I mean, it's like if you have the hardware, which is not hard to find, and it's pretty easy to do if you know what you're doing. But for some people, just being able to play the games on TV is an improvement over playing emulators on their PC. Because you can hook a PC up to a TV, but a lot of people don't do that. So, you know, it's like they find it simpler, and to not have to worry about, you know, configuring a third-party controller or playing with a keyboard. You know, I think for a lot of people like us, emulation is a more viable option because we know how to do all those things, and we could do it that way. So I think, yeah, I mean, but the only way to make it more appealing to those kind of people is, one, to add more features to the emulation, which Nintendo has done on the Wii U, and ideally they will continue to do. And there's also lowering the price. And like I said, I think, you know, Nintendo could probably cut the price in half on all these games on the Virtual Console, but I think they would argue that they would probably make less money doing that, that the extra sales wouldn't make up for the lower prices. So I don't know that there's... I think Nintendo could take steps to make things more appealing, but I don't know that there's that much they can do.
What about, you know how they released the Earthbound guide online at the same time Earthbound went out? What if they'd had that as like an app for the Wii U, so it was like an extra download that came with the Earthbound game ROM? Like, what if they started bundling with some of the higher profile games, they started bundling like little special features, like some nicely put together, like behind the scenes little interviews and text stuff, like just like maybe like a few pages of something, like it might get more people interested in downloading stuff, like little bonus extras.
That would definitely get me more interested.
Yeah. Well, I mean, with Earthbound, the guide is, I mean, it's online, but the web page is designed with the Wii U internet browser in mind.
I know that, but like, if you were just some guy that just jumps on the Wii U like 6 months from now and decides to download Earthbound, he probably won't realize that that's out there.
Yeah, Nintendo needs to do a better job of letting people know these things are there. That's true, yeah. And I agree with you that you could do a lot of cool stuff that's, you know, whether it's releasing, like, concept art or, you know, original production materials and kind of stuff that would be neat and people would like to have as part of it.
They could just scan some, like, early concept art, game art, early production, like, notes or something, and just throw that into a little standalone app that comes with the ROM, and you can view it on your Wii U on the gamepad.
I mean, I think the kind of people who are interested in older games like these are likely the kind of people who would be interested in seeing, you know, what was behind them, how they were made, and what was going on at the time. I think the audience overlaps a lot there, and so. I mean, I think this is stuff Nintendo and the other companies probably have on hand. They just have sitting there somewhere. So I think this would be a good way to encourage people to buy things.
But would you... I think with the strategy guide, it was a little disheartening to me to see that even though it was optimized for the Wii U browser, that it was relegated to a browser. I don't know how viable this is, but it would have been really nice, and I would have probably even paid $12 for it if they had that strategy guide, like, in the download itself, if that was optional to keep in the bottom screen instead of having the off-TV play.
Well, I mean, you know, with the Wii U, you can open the browser without leaving the game, so you can switch back and forth between them, so it works pretty well, but, I mean, it would be nice to have it so you could be, you know, open simultaneously.
Yeah, I downloaded the PDF that Nintendo Europe has on their website, so when I get round to it, I might throw it on a tablet or something and just have it next to me anyway. But
yeah,
like we were saying, adding little bonuses and stuff I think would be a good way to like justify the current prices more so for some people, but at the same time not rising them any higher.
Yeah, I think, you know, especially something like that, which would be fairly cheap and easy to include. So I think that would be a good way to get people more willing to pay that price.
Okay, guys, I think we'll wrap it up here. And so any last words?
I mean, yeah, it's kind of a complicated thing to what the prices should be. And I'm willing to pay them. Certainly, Alex, a lot of the time isn't. So I guess just going to depend on the person.
Yep.
But with Nintendo, I think it's just a little different for me because I value my digital platforms just a little differently. Because with Nintendo, I don't have that security and things are priced a little more than I want. But on Steam, let's say a sale's going on, I'm bound to drop $60 on digital games that I probably wouldn't have even paid. I think other platforms like PSN and Steam do a great job of making me want to buy digital things. And I think the only thing Nintendo is doing is making the content available. And I don't think they're doing much else to encourage me to pay them money.
Yeah, I mean, I think Nintendo could look to them as an example of where they could go from here, because they do a lot of interesting things.
I think there's room to go up, definitely.
Oh, certainly.
Okay, well, thanks, guys, for coming on, and we'll leave it there.
Bye.
Bye.
everyone, and welcome to this segment of Connectivity. I'm Scott Thompson. Today I'm with Mike Spuns.
Hello.
Patrick Barnett.
Hi, everyone.
And Andy Gergen.
Hey, everyone.
And today we're going to be talking about games we've been playing recently. We haven't done one of these in a while, so we've kind of all got a little bit of a log of games to talk about, stuff that's come out real recently, stuff that came out months ago, and some stuff that's not on Nintendo platforms at all. So there'll be a little bit of everything, I think. So let's start with something that just came out recently, and that Mike, myself, and Patrick have been playing, and that's Earthbound. Now,
my memory serves me right, you are a massive fan of this game, right, Scott?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
I'm curious, what are your histories with this series at all, either of you? Have you guys played the Earthbound Zero ROM that's floating around out there?
I haven't played the original Mother Earthbound Zero. Yeah, no, I haven't played that. I got Earthbound when I was like 10 on my Super Nintendo. I mean, I got it when it came out, and I still have my cartridge from when I was a kid with my save file from when I beat it when I was a kid, which is, it's funny to look at. And
you're one of the lucky, like, what was it, 150,000 people who bought that game?
Who actually bought it, yeah. Unfortunately,
it was on that Game Life piece earlier this week.
That's all it sold, really?
Yeah, wow. I'm going to look it up again to be sure.
It was on Wired, right? Yeah, I heard about that.
I've been listening to podcasts all week, and each one is just telling stories of how they got this game when they were kids. And it was just like a story of walking into a Best Buy, and there'd be just a giant bargain bin of Earthbound sitting just...
because it came out in 95.
So yeah, 150,000 copies.
That's crazy. Yeah, I mean, it came out in 95, so within a year, you had like the launch of the N64... Mm-hmm. And stuff like that. So I remember that with a lot of Super Nintendo and Genesis games that at that, like, that turn, I mean, they were just trying to clear everything out, and there was a lot of Earthbound. I mean, it was a first party Nintendo game that just didn't do very well. So I've always had it and always enjoyed it. I've played the fan translation of Mother 3. In fact, I mean, Nate and I have talked about it before, but if it wasn't for that game, like, I wouldn't be here talking to you guys right now. Like, the first time I ever decided to try podcasting was with some, like, 1UP community members. I was like, I want to play Mother 3 and talk about it. I'll just find random people who want to do that, too, and I'll record a podcast, and we'll talk about Mother 3. So that's how I met Nate, was just through 1UP doing that, and then a couple other people. And then from there, I just kept doing little podcasts, and it eventually turned into this. So
cool.
I'm, like, the opposite.
How could it be the opposite?
I have tried to play Earthbound a couple of times. Like, I think this is probably my fifth time, maybe fourth, trying to play Earthbound. This is the first time I've made it past Onet. Or is that how you say it, or is it Want?
Everyone kind of has. I say on it, or I say Onet. Yeah.
Okay. Hmm. I know it's 1, 2, 3, so I thought maybe it should be Want, but that doesn't sound right, and I've never heard anyone say that.
No, yeah. I've always heard on it, or, yeah.
Anyway,
I didn't realize that 1, 2, 3 thing. Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
They don't stick with it the whole way, unfortunately, but the first four cities are that way, yeah.
Oh. Huh.
Yeah.
So I never made it past Onnit or Onet or whatever you're going to say. The game is a fucking asshole to you. Like, as big of an asshole as it could possibly be, like, as soon as you turn it on, and it's getting less asshole-ish as I get through the game.
Isn't that weird?
It does not leave a good first impression. This time, I almost snapped my frigging gamepad in half this time, because I went through all this stuff, like, at the beginning of the game, and then you finally get, like, control where you can actually walk around and start fighting enemies. I walk out, a crow attacks me, like, before I even get through the front fence of Ness's house. Ness whiffs 3 times and dies. That is the first impression the game gave me this time, and this is literally the worst it's ever been, and I almost wanted to give up immediately, but I spent 10 goddamn dollars on it.
I noticed that in the opening hour or so, the enemies seem way more powerful than they need to be, and
they're so rough.
I might have died probably 5 or 6 times in that.
Yeah.
And I wrote that in my review for IGN, and I think it's, like, it's really weird that it's so difficult in the beginning, and you're right, like, it gets easier as you progress. Like, every time you get basically a new character, it becomes easier, because there's, like, the damage is just dispersed. But when you're fighting just as Ness, like, 2 or 3 characters at the same time, I mean, you have to heal, like, every other turn, or you're just boned. I mean, like, it's really weird how stacked it is in terms of difficulty in the
beginning.
And
then you'll get in, like, one of the skate punks, and he keeps calling for fucking backup.
Yeah.
So you and it think, takes yeah, me like three just... turns to kill him, which means he could, in theory, like call three more dudes, though it doesn't succeed that often because the fail rates on the game are insane. You're always missing. The enemies are too, but goddamn.
I had an instance where the guy called in backup. I used my next attack. I missed. They both attacked, and they both had critical hits and wiped me out from full health.
Yep.
It was blows my mind.
Yeah, it's such a dickhead. Oh,
it is. It's really. It's
and
really
then ironically,
bizarre.
Like you get to the first boss, you get to Frank, and you're like, oh, how am I going to get through this? And he's like, he's not that hard. He goes down to like four rounds.
Yeah, he isn't that hard. And then what you'll find, like playing the game, and I'm at near the end. I'm like at the very last part of the game again now, and I haven't done that in a while, but the bosses usually aren't that challenging, but the random enemies really are. Like, even still late in the game, like, I'll fight random enemies that will use spells that will, like, automatically kill you, and I'll struggle with that, but then I'll get to a boss, and usually because it's just one on four, like, I'll have no problem whatsoever. It's really weird. Like, the balancing is definitely weird.
Yeah, it's the only the nice thing about this time playing it through is, I guess, well, every other time I've played it on an emulator, but I'm just abusing save states this time.
Well, how are you abusing them? Like you'll save state before every battle or something?
Not before every battle, but like before like I'll do a save state like as soon as I walk into a section of a dungeon, I'll save state there and I'll get through that whole room and then I'll save state again. Just because every now and then you'll just get into a battle where it's like, I went into this battle thinking it would be no problem, and now it's game over.
See, I don't think that's a huge problem, though, because the risk of dying isn't... Well, the risk is great, but the punishment for dying isn't that
You lose
bad.
Half your cash on hand, and you have to pay to revive all those motherfuckers that are dead.
Well, you just grab it from an ATM right when you spawn again. You spawn right next to an ATM, essentially, so I'd never carry any money with me when I go anywhere.
Yeah, same
I guess
here.
I should stop doing that.
Yeah, I don't carry any money. I keep it all in the bank.
I'm not
I just
carrying
take out...
much. If I am, I'm carrying like $200 or $300, just like the change from what I bought at the
what
store.
What you bought, yeah.
So when I buy something, I just immediately deposit the rest of it.
I guess the ATM's right there at the store, so I really should just do that.
And then I think dying is kind of rewarding in a way, because then you have to go all the way through the dungeon again, and then you're leveling. So most likely when you get back to whatever killed you, you'll be, like, better prepared.
See, if I want to grind, and I am grinding in this game, I'm just doing it on my own terms.
Yeah.
I don't want to bother with the fucking walking. It gives me flashbacks of Zelda, too, where it's like, oh, you died three times? Have fun walking for 5 minutes.
Yeah, it depends. Like, especially...
Because in the game, you move slow. Walk so slow.
You do.
The game kind of forces you to grind as well, because enemies are spawning all over the place whenever you walk anywhere.
You walk like out away from a screen, like just barely, and then you come back, and there's a whole new batch of enemies.
Yeah. That's nice, though. You can use that to your advantage. If I see that there's an enemy that I know is like kind of a pain in the ass, and I don't really want to fight him, I just back up and then move forward, and he's gone.
And he's usually gone. Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, it's kind of nice that the enemies are on screen, but that's kind of an illusion because you can't really like dodge them at all. Right. Like if they see you, they charge you.
Yeah.
They come straight at you.
You can, if they're on the very edge of the screen, you can maneuver your way around them. Yeah. But if you're anywhere remotely near them, they're going to grab you unless you're so powerful that they run away,
which is awesome.
That's great. Cause then you can try to chase them down and just thwack, give me an experience point.
Yep. One hit kill. Yeah. It's awesome. I love that. That's such a cool idea that just, I'm surprised it hasn't popped up more in games.
Does that only happen when an enemy's so many levels underneath you?
There's two ways it happens. It happens if an enemy's way lower than you, and it kind of like has a like a it must have like an algorithm it runs where it's like it determines that more than likely all your characters will kill it in the first round before it gets a chance to attack. So even if you're stronger than an enemy, but it's got really high speed, sometimes you'll still have to fight it because it could still do damage to you. And then the other way is if you beat, like, the boss of a dungeon, as you walk back through the dungeon, all the enemies will run away from you, even though you probably won't kill them in one hit, which is great, because usually they're still worth a lot of experience.
Yeah.
So you could still go get them. You get the bonus attack because they're running away from you, so you get, like, the green swirl, and then usually it lets you automatically win, because then it's doing the algorithm and saying, okay, well, in two turns, he would kill his enemy before it got a chance to attack. So it's a really good way to, like, level up as you're leaving a dungeon.
When it first happened, I felt like maybe I was holding a button in or something like that, and it just auto-ran the battle for
me. Like it was a quick timer something?
Yeah. Like it would deduct my health so much. That's
what that auto-fight mode, because it's got that auto-fight mode. I did that once, and I got a game over using it.
Because I said, oh, well, this guy's only got like 2 hits left. I'll just put it on auto fight. Oh, guess what? He called for backup 3 times in the meantime. And now I'm dead because I can't turn auto fight off.
Yeah, don't
That's
do
so
auto fight.
That's so dumb. Why can't you cancel it?
Don't do auto fight ever. You're better off just mashing A a bunch.
Like, if I'm at the point where I wanted to auto fight something, guess what? It does that for you because it does that algorithm to determine if you're just going to win anyway.
Yeah.
So auto fight's kind of pointless.
Yeah. Yep. Eventually, way late in the game, Ness gets this like crazy bat that is like double the damage he can do at that point, but it has horrible accuracy. Like if you actually get in a fight, you'll never hit. But because it has such a high damage potential, that the enemies that are like that you should be fighting actually run away from you, and you can do like the one hit thing on them a lot. But if you actually get in a fight, you'll find that Ness like never hits. But because of that algorithm, and it's part of the game, it's not like it's like a glitch or something, or like you're exploiting. I mean, that's the idea. Is
that's the idea
put
of that
bat just to kind of like scare enemies off.
So it's a though, bat that hits worse than a yo-yo.
Yeah, which
I
is funny, right?
Yo-yos quick
because the items they don't really like show you their stats. I mean, like all you see is damage output, so like you don't really know that certain items hit less frequently than others. But you're right; you learn it quickly. Like yo-yos are terrible. I'm trying to think. There's something else besides yo-yos, but yo-yos are really bad.
Is it the slingshot? That's another early
yes,
game item.
Yes, okay. The slingshots. Yeah, the slingshots are really bad too. Good damage, but they just they hit less frequently. The bats and the frying pans are always the best thing to go with. But what do you guys think about? Because Patrick, you've never played it before, right? This is your first time. What do you guys think about just sort of like the world and like even just the sense of humor that the game has?
I think it's very odd, but still adorably funny in some ways. Mm-hmm. Like the camera guy that keeps showing up. Seemingly randomly. I don't know why or when he shows up. Is it on a timer? Is that what that is?
No, it's when you hit like specific moments in the game. So it's like when you're like you've done something important, like when you get your next character to join your party, or when you beat a specific boss, or just things like that. When you do something monumentous in the game.
I wasn't sure because sometimes it would be like I walk past one rock in the middle of a the one area between Houston and Happy Happy Village, and he just shows up. And say Fuzzy Pickles and get your picture taken.
Yeah, those will all the pictures he's taking will pop up at the end of the game.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. But it's the same picture every time, right?
Yeah, and that's what's disappointing is like it's
they're not really photos of your game,
right? It's not saving what you're doing. So like, if he took a picture of you while one of your characters was a ghost or something, you won't see that at the end. Oh. It's just like stock pictures. Oh. It's supposed to look like
it's cute.
Yeah. They play during the credits, all the pictures. But yeah, they're not, that which is unfortunate. They're not specific to your actual game, which defeats the purpose a little bit, but it's still silly.
I know Patrick was saying right before we started recording that he finds that this game is putting him to sleep.
Oh, yeah.
I find it kind of similar. I've been playing it a lot, like, in bed on the gamepad, mm-hmm. which is the perfect game for this, because it's got, like, the L button acts as, like, your kind of do-everything button. Mm-hmm. So you could just play like the game one-handed until you really get. And you could play the whole game one-handed if you wanted, I guess. Unless you had to get into your inventory, like that's basically on the world map. If you need to do things, you kind of need both hands. But other than that, you can do almost everything with the L button and the D-pad.
Yeah. That's true.
You mentioned playing it on the gamepad. I tweeted this right the first day I played it, but I think this is the first turn-based RPG that has gamepad only play to come out on Wii U. And I think it really shows how perfect that genre is for the Wii U.
I guess that's true, because not much, like, no turn-based RPGs have hit the Wii U Virtual Console yet, except for Earthbound. And
there's no new releases out yet, obviously.
That's true. Well, Monster Hunter, well, that's not a turn-based game. Yeah, I guess I get what you're saying, yeah. Well, yeah, these older games are, like, perfect for this. Like, I would love to play some of these older RPGs and stuff.
But even a newer one, like a recent Final Fantasy game, would play really good on it because it's turn based.
Yeah.
It's not something you need to like pay super super close attention to.
No, you could just like click through. It's what the 3DS is perfect for as well. It's just an extension of that.
Yeah, no, I agree. So, Patrick, especially because you haven't played the game before, Earthbound, like, are you surprised playing it at the kind of game it is? Like, I'm always interested because, you know, you have Ness in Super Smash Brothers, and looking at screenshots, I mean, it just looks like this kind of cute, like, kiddie game. Like, are you surprised at the difficulty? Are you surprised? I mean, has anything surprised you about Earthbound to this point?
Probably the most surprising thing is that Ness has even made it into Smash Brothers. looking at how small of a character he is, looking at the game, he was just in, what, this one game, and I guess Mother 1, was that Ness in that?
No, I believe it's a different character.
It's just odd to me to see this character that appeared on just a Super
Nintendo
game.
And he was
Nintendo
in the first
game.
Smash Brothers.
Yeah, he was in
it's
the
not,
first
I mean,
one.
I could see, like, if he made it into Melee, because it's got a huge roster.
But yeah.
The first one has, like, what, like 8 or 12 characters or something?
Mm-hmm.
But he was at least an unlockable character, right?
Yeah.
In the first one.
He was the best character in the first one.
Yeah. I mean, I guess just that's just kind of, maybe just to be a big Easter egg, you know, just to kind of surprise people. And
I'm sure, like, Sakurai probably just loved him or something.
Yeah. It is surprising, though.
Looking at that and seeing how he went from just this 2D sprite on a Super Nintendo to a fully 3D realized model was kind of interesting as well.
Yeah.
I was really surprised by the way he looks in the game, actually, because he doesn't look that much like what I expect Ness to look like based in Smash Brothers. Like, he doesn't.
He looks like the little 3D like clay version of Ness that they used on the player's guide and stuff, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't look like at all. Like, I can't figure out how they got to the Smash Brothers model from what I've seen in Earthbound so far.
Speaking of the player's guide, have you guys been using it?
Yeah,
I have actually. Yeah.
Yeah, I found myself using it a couple times when I'm just like, what the heck am I supposed to do? It's just, sometimes the game isn't really perfect about telling you where to go next.
Or right.
Sometimes there'll be like some really little thing that you have to do before the next thing that you think you're supposed to be doing now.
I really wish they had just built it into the manual of the game. And I don't like having to go to the browser to get to it. I wish I had a better iPad. My iPad's old and slow as crap. Otherwise, I would just pull up on the iPad and be done with it.
Yeah. That's what I ended up doing because it's a very slow process. And because you have to like completely suspend the game and switch over to the browser, it's like, okay, I've looked at what I need to do. And then you do it and you're like, oh, wait, what was I supposed to do next? And then you're like spending 3 minutes switching over and reading a little paragraph of text what you need to do next. You know, switching back and then
it does work well though. The web view they have set up for it works very well on the gamepad.
Oh yeah, it looks really nice on the gamepad. Mm-hmm. It does, and you can tell it was kind of like formatted for the gamepad. But
like that $2 price hike would feel a little more justified if the game itself included it instead of just it being out there for you to look at.
That's true.
Because I think we're all kind of the agreement that that's what the $2 price hike is for, kind of, right?
No, the $2 price hike is there because they know they can do it. I don't. Yep. They think they may say it's for the player's guide, but that's bullshit.
Yeah, no, it's because they knew they could charge more for sure. Law of demand.
It's like the Square Enix tax.
Yeah,
it's a kind of a dick move, if you ask me.
I feel like it's a ballsy move considering this is a game that hasn't come out here specifically because they said it wouldn't sell. And so they made it even harder for it to sell. Like, it just, why put more obstacles in front of a game that you've already admitted is a really tough sell to people?
I guess because they knew regardless the people who were going to buy it would buy it at any price.
Yeah,
or at least relatively at any price. So they just figured they could, charge an extra $2 and make a little extra money,
I
guess.
Do you think Nintendo has any expectations here that this game will sell to anybody except for the cult Earthbound fan?
Well, it's the number one seller right now in Europe on the eShop.
Not North America, though.
But apparently it's climbing up the list.
It was number two, I think. It was Donkey Kong had...
And Donkey Kong's on sale for 30 cents, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I don't know what their expectations are really with this. I mean, they must think it's going to be something bigger than just like appealing to all people who are already Earthbound fans. I mean, the fact that it was like highlighted in the Nintendo Direct, they had that snazzy trailer, you know, like with that awesome, like kind of CG, like footage mixed with sprites from the game. I loved that trailer in the Nintendo Direct. And then, the going through the hassle of doing the player's guide stuff and everything like that. I think they're expecting more of this. Than just appealing to Earthbound fans. I think they're trying to blow it out. It even has a little spot on the Miiverse, mm-hmm. on the War Plaza now and everything. So,
do you think they put it there on purpose? I thought that was driven by popularity.
I think they control that.
I think they select what goes there.
Yeah, for sure. So they did it on purpose to give it some more exposure. So,
do you guys think this whole Earthbound releasing it was kind of in a preparation for possibly a Mother 4?
I don't think so.
No.
I think Nintendo would be open to either bringing Mother 3 to North America or continuing the franchise with a Mother 4, but only if Earthbound sells really, really well in North America. And I think this is Nintendo's way very much of saying, okay, you've been bitching and moaning for a really long time. We're about to find out for real. I think, honestly, this might be, quite frankly, this might be their way of justifying being done with it. Like, they can bring it out here, and then once and for all, they can be like, it sells like dog food. Like, it sells like nothing. Yeah. So this almost feels like a way of, like, it's a real put-up-and-shut-up moment for Earthbound fans.
Well, yeah. I don't know about Mother 4. I mean, they'd have to get Itoy to write it, and that's, I think, the biggest obstacle to Mother 4.
Well, and didn't he flat out say he didn't think there would ever be a Mother 4?
I think so. I mean, I think he did.
A few months ago, but yeah, like in April or something, he said that it would be like nearly impossible for them to make a fourth entry. I think just because of lack of interest or seeming lack of interest. But yeah, who knows? I mean, if this goes well, I'd love to see them bring Mother 3 here.
I think the only way we'll get Mother 3 is if they're willing to just pay for the fans translation and use it.
The fan translator said he was willing to just give it to them.
Yeah.
Well, good. Because I feel like that's the only way it's really going to happen, because they, based on what they think about how Earthbound sells, which is certainly justified with the SNES, but we'll see about on Wii U. I mean, they're certainly not going to spend any money to localize it.
How correlated are the Mother games? How tied together are they in terms of narrative?
They aren't.
They're not.
The first one and the second one share the villain. I believe he's the same guy.
Oh, okay. Gigas.
If I remember reading correctly.
Yeah, Earthbound / Mother 2 and Mother 3 aren't really related at all. There's, I don't know. You don't have to play Earthbound to enjoy Mother 3 or vice versa, obviously. But there are some like allusions to Earthbound in Mother 3 that if you've played Earthbound, like, you'll appreciate. But it doesn't take away from the game if you haven't played. I mean, you know, there's no recurring characters or anything, but there are
kind of like the cameos in Wreck-It Ralph. Like, they're there, and if you get them, they enhance it, and if you don't, that doesn't do anything.
Exactly. Or even the references in Earthbound, you know, like when they reference.
Yeah.
I mean, none of you have gotten that far yet, but there's I love a Beatles reference that happens at one point. And it's so funny, like, if you get it. And it cracks me up every single time.
Scott, you've actually played the Virtual Console one all the way through?
I'm at the very end.
Have you found any changes from the Super NES version?
No, none at all.
I think I found one. But from that interview, from that interview that the original localizer did with Chris Kohler this week, he mentions the one thing they missed was, because they had to take a lot of, like, stuff out, like, because Nintendo was very, very conservative back then. So, like, in the graveyard, there's, like, the cemetery, the gravestones have crosses on them, but apparently they missed one in the SNES version. But I looked through all of the cemetery in 3D. I didn't see a crucifix on any of them, so I think they might have fixed that.
But, well, apart from something minute like that, no, I haven't noticed anything. I was hoping it would run a little smoother. Like, you guys have probably noticed when there's, like, 4 or 5 enemies on the screen, it really kind of starts to chug.
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't even really gotten to the point where I would come across 4 or 5 enemies.
Okay, yeah. Once you, like, get to some dungeons where there's a lot of stuff, like, happening at once, you'll notice, like,
I'm literally 25 to 35 minutes in. Like, I'm just sort of setting out.
So the game's still kicking your ass.
No, well, a little bit.
I feel like the game doesn't kick your ass until you hit the part where you're fighting the street gang, the sharks.
Yeah, I'm mostly fighting, like, birds and snakes.
Right? Unless you get unlucky like me and whiff on the first fucking crow.
But, yeah, no, I haven't really noticed any big changes or anything. But, yeah, I love that game. So good. But I would urge anyone, you three or anyone listening who's enjoying Earthbound right now and is curious about Mother 3, just go ahead and play the fan translation. I mean, it's a different case than something like Super Nintendo, where it's out there and you could get it legally. I mean, if Nintendo's not bringing it here, they're not bringing it here. So, I mean,
it's hard because I want to play it, like, on a console, like on a handheld. I don't want to sit at my computer and play it.
I played it twice. I played it once on a computer, with just a gamepad, like a PC controller, that kind of sucked. And then I actually played it on Homebrew on my Wii, and that worked. That was actually really nice, because then I just used the Wii controller. That was pretty nice.
I used the Wii controller when I played it on my my MacBook. I just Bluetoothed it in. There's a program that lets you interpret it.
There you go. But I might like Mother 3 more than Earthbound, actually. Mother 3 is really good. Really good. So, that's it. We should move on. because I think we'll do a full Earthbound segment.
Once we've all finished it.
That wasn't
yeah,
a full
we kind of did segment. Do a full Earthbound segment.
Well, I want to talk like story and spoilers yeah. and just crazy nonsense and yeah, just...
Well, it's
yeah.
good. We don't have to talk all about this stuff when we do that.
Yeah, exactly. We got all this stuff out of the way. So, I don't know. Who wants to go next? We all kind of have a lot. I don't really need to talk about anything else. All I've really played besides Earthbound, because I've been just trying to like get through it as quickly as possible, is like Animal Crossing.
Well, I have two quick ones.
Yeah, go ahead.
I do those. So I played a good chunk of Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon like months ago. I started playing it.
Yeah.
And then I kind of took a break from it. I finished the Clockworks. Or I'm at the boss of the Clockworks, maybe.
That's okay. the third mansion, right?
I finished it, yeah. It's been the least interesting one so far.
That's where I stalled at.
I'm hoping the next mansion is a little bit better, because the Clockworks was kind of boring, but I do really super enjoy the hell out of this game. It's Luigi's Mansion. It's almost perfect. The only way it would be perfect is if it had dual analog controls, because I hate getting locked into a direction. The first one, you can kind of move through it a little quicker, because you can operate the vacuum and your movement separately.
Yeah.
But this one, I'm constantly like fidgeting with my position on stuff.
Yeah,
but I do really
enjoy it. It's so
charming,
though, right?
It's so good.
It's so much fun.
Just all the little like gags, like and the sight gags, and I just love that Luigi like goes around humming and whistling the music.
Yeah, and even just simple stuff. Like I love the way he always kind of like pats his pockets looking for the DS every time he gets a call and
yeah.
stuff. Like it's so charming.
I need to get that buzzer, that ringtone that he has. I want that to get to be my ringtone.
I think if someone.
I'm
mean,
sure
it's
someone
available
did it.
As a ringtone,
sure,
right? Yeah.
It'll take me 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's pretty great. And then the other game I've been playing a lot of is Donkey Kong Country Returns 3D. I never played the Wii version, and I had a bunch of Amazon credit saved up, so I got it for 3DS to play on a trip to Los Angeles. And I actually didn't play it that much in Los Angeles, but I played it a bunch before. I'm on the factory now, and this game is fucking hard.
It is hard, yeah.
Oh, I can't imagine playing it on the Wii and having to do the shake to roll. I think the way I play, I would probably like accidentally roll too often, and I would probably hate the game entirely.
Marathoned it for review, so I feel you.
Yeah, the shake to roll thing was a mistake. It's not that sensitive. I mean, you're not really rolling on accident, but it's still kind of a pain. There's always like that little bit of delay where you're like shaking the remote to try to make yourself do it. I mean, a button press is much better, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's really
I played the 3DS one a little bit on like a demo unit at Target, and I don't know, like the controls don't feel great. And I remember Neil mentioned this during his review of the 3DS game as well. Like, it doesn't feel like they really got the control scheme quite right on the 3DS version either. There's some weird like shoulder button chicanery that you have to go through to do all.
I actually like that.
You have to use
the shoulder button to grab, and it's a little it's a little unnatural, I guess, when you're picking up barrels. But when you're clinging on like the grass and like climbing around stuff, it's really great because you can just hold your finger on the top of the system, and you don't have to worry about it really slipping off. Like if you had to hold a face button down, and then you had to use another face button to jump from one grassy thing to another grassy thing, I could see that like messing up if you don't hit the grab button again quick enough. But with it on the shoulder, you can just keep it held down the whole time.
You know, honestly, given this game's legacy, we're probably just lucky we didn't have to use the touchscreen to grab onto things.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, that's true.
And I guess it's neat that there's all these extra levels, but they're almost impossible to get to because you have to be crazy good to even unlock them.
Are you playing on the new mode?
Yeah, I'm playing on new easy mode or whatever you want to call it. Yeah, I'm still finding it. I mean, it doesn't change the game at all. It just gives you more leeway.
Yeah.
Like the minecart.
You get extra hearts and stuff
Yeah, you get three hearts or six when you've got Diddy. And then you have like the green balloon item that you can use. Or you can use the crash guard. But the problem is you have to be outside of the level to equip them. So if I get like halfway through a minecart level and I can like, I finally made it to the checkpoint. And then I make it to the second part and I'm just like, there's this one part I can't get through. I need the crash guard. Guess what? You need to exit the level entirely, put the crash guard on. And then you have to hope you make it all the way back to that checkpoint without using up your crash guard.
Hmm.
That's a pain in the ass. So I find myself not really using them that often unless I get really frustrated with a level.
I remember really, really enjoying the Wii version, but I also remember after I finished it, and I gave it a very positive review. I think it might be the highest review I've given on the site to date. but I never went back to it after I finished it. I finished it and I was like, that I'm was done a blast. With the new game. Yeah. And then I put it down and I was like, I'll come back to that later. And never.
It doesn't really make you want to come back unless you're like really got like an itch for like a hardcore platforming game, because it definitely is that.
Yeah.
I think the only thing that saves it is that the levels do not have a timer. I think if these levels had a timer, I would probably not even play the game.
Yeah.
But it's good. I really like it. It's just, it kind of crushes your soul a bit because it's so difficult.
Yeah, it is.
It gives you tons of extra lives, though. It's got that same philosophy as Mario now, where it's just like, we're going to give you so many lives that lives don't even really matter.
And they always seem to do it, like, especially on the difficult levels, like the really, the ones they know you're going to die a lot, like they'll have a lot of bananas that you always pick up automatically, or like they'll literally just have balloons throughout the stages that you like can't miss.
You have to be kind of, sometimes you have to be kind of quick to get them, but they're not that hard to get.
No, yeah.
It was like that in the original Donkey Kong countries, though, as well, where they'd have those balloons placed right where you needed them.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I like it, though. Good game.
I really like that game, yeah.
I don't know if I'll pick up Tropical Freeze. I might wait until it gets cheap or something.
Or port it to the 3DS.
No, I want to see his fur rendered individually.
Yeah. I'm actually really excited for Tropical Freeze. I can't wait.
I think,
really...
you know what, it's based on this game. I'm not upset that they're making more of it, but I like, it's just a game where you're like, okay, yeah, the first one's good, so I guess I'll play the second one, but it was not like the E3 shocker that everyone wanted from Retro.
No. No, it was not. I mean, leading up to E3, it was all like, they're going to have a new IP, it's going to like be awesome, and then it's just another Donkey Kong game, which will be good, but yeah, it's disappointing.
Another platformer? We need more genres, please. I love platformers, but I want something else.
Yeah, Nintendo's established they are the kings of the 2D platformer.
They're two big games this year. They're two big Wii U games, I guess, excluding Wind Waker, because that's big, but it's not a new game. Their two big games are Donkey Kong Country and Mario, and they're both fucking platformers.
Yeah.
They're the kings of the 2D platformer, but that is a particularly empty kingdom.
Exactly.
Donkey Kong Country should be... this Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze should be a support title in a year where there is not a major platformer coming out.
Yeah.
It should be summer 2014's game.
Yeah.
Right. Not holiday season.
Yeah, not holiday 2013.
Yeah, agreed.
Or it should have been summer 2013. It should have been out fucking 6 months ago when there was no games to play.
That would have been smart, yeah.
Instead of Game and Wario.
Oh, God, yeah.
Until the summer.
Yes. So what else did you have, Mike?
What else did I have? I think I had one more game.
Well, you had Animal Crossing.
I just had Animal Crossing, yeah. I've got Animal Crossing. I'm in love with it. I'm not in love with Animal Crossing. I actually didn't even get it. Amanda got it for her birthday from one of her friends. She's been playing it on my 3DS, which will become her 3DS once I eventually upgrade to an XL, because I'm sure there's going to be a special Zelda XL this Christmas. Because why would there not be?
Well, there's no Zelda games coming out for the 3DS this Christmas, are there?
Yeah, Link Between Worlds.
When Link to the Past 2 come out.
Oh, yeah, right.
There's definitely going to be a custom XL for that game.
You're right, yeah. The Animal Crossing XL is awesome.
Yeah, one of my friends got it, and it's beautiful, but Amanda just got the game, so she's the mayor, but I live in the village as well.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I think I might be done with Animal Crossing for now. I don't think I've picked it up in about a week and a half.
Yeah,
that's a bad sign.
I go in, and I open the game up, and I load it up, and then I start running around the town, and like 30 seconds later, I'm like, no. I'm not feeling it yet. I think I've gone in, played for a minute, and saved maybe twice in that week and a half stretch, but I haven't spent any significant stretch of time in a good 8 to 10 days. I think it's going to be a thing where, like, in the winter sometime, I'm going to be like, I wonder what my town looks like in the winter. And then I'll fire it up, and then I'll get hooked all over again. But after, and you remember, I had it about 2 weeks before it came out, so I have had a little bit longer with the game, but... Still, my tolerance for Animal Crossing when I don't have that like day-to-day interaction with other residents of the same town. I still think Animal Crossing is best played with multiple people in the same town and kind of playing it in like in turns. The best part about Animal Crossing is loading up the game and seeing what other actual people have done in your town since you played last. And that doesn't happen unless you leave your town open for visitors all the time. The GameCube game is really the only one Well, I suppose the Wii one to some extent too, mm-hmm. but the GameCube game is really the one that's designed that way. The 3DS and the DS games aren't so much.
The GameCube one hooked. I mean, I've talked about it on this podcast a million times, but we set it up in my college apartment, and it became the who can wake up earliest and take all the fossils game.
Exactly. Like I had it in a dorm, and I mean, it was my GameCube and my game, but everyone on my at least six other people on my floor were just like coming in my room at all hours of the day and night playing it, and I was totally happy with it because it was such so much fun.
That's what it's for. Like, it's really good for that. This one is good because I've got a pretty extensive 3DS friends list. So, like, we will just leave the gate open and people will just, like, wander in, or we'll do that. You know, we'll see that other people have their gates open and we'll go wander into their towns.
But you do really have to go out of your way to make that.
Yeah, you have to go out of your way to make it happen, which is kind of a bummer. But it's nice. And
at least 10% of the time that I do that, I come back to a network error message.
Yeah, I had that happen to me once. It was mid session though. Like I was walking around my friend's town and it just disconnected.
Yeah, I've had that happen multiple times. I was at the Best Buy event for the E3 thing, and I was playing Animal Crossing local wireless with some people there. There was actually a lot of local wireless going on for Animal Crossing that day, while we were waiting around to play. And like some of the guys there were convinced they could just close their 3DS in the middle of a multiplayer session and it wouldn't be a problem. And sure enough, like they closed their 3DS, and like 5 minutes later, everyone else got kicked out.
I like I'm not that huge into Animal Crossing now, so I like that Amanda's the mayor because she's obsessed with Animal Crossing. So I know she's gonna play it like every single day, and then I've been playing it every day, but we've only had it for a week. But I'm only dropping in for like somewhere between 20 to maybe 30 minutes a day, like maybe 45 on a weekend.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I missed a couple days, but I'll just come and go, and I'm like, I'm nowhere near like as far into the game as she is, but that's kind of like, if I was the only one playing it, I don't think I would have the wherewithal to keep coming back like only 2 to 3 times a week. But since I know she's playing it all the time, I know stuff is still always changing, even if I'm not really pushing it forward always.
I think that's the problem I'm running into, where I played it for maybe 2 weeks and I've done everything that's new with this entry in the Animal Crossing series. But I've played all the other games, so there's nothing really enticing to draw me back in day after day. So I haven't picked it up in probably a week or two now.
Yeah. It's a great Animal Crossing game, but no Animal Crossing game has hooked me like the GameCube one hooked me, and that has a lot less to do with the game itself and more to do with my life situation then versus now. So,
Andy, it's a good game, agreement.
But, yeah.
So yeah, I guess that's it for you then, Mike. And that all I had really else to talk about was Animal Crossing too. I mean, I played the Street Pass games, but I don't know. I mean, have you guys dabbled in the new Street Pass games at all?
I haven't even bought them yet.
No, but I did go when I was in Los Angeles. We went to Anime Expo, and I got a fucking shitload of Street Passes. It was awesome.
Well, these so Street Pass games would be really bad for that because they all take a lot longer to get through now.
Yeah, that's what I read. I'm not going to get them. If I'm lucky, I get a Street Pass a week in Tallahassee.
I'll probably get them right before PAX next year.
And see, yeah. they're going to be so terrible for PAX because they're all, well, I don't like the flower
you
one.
You don't
but
have to play them correctly to clear out your Street Pass. Right?
Well, no, yeah, you could just ignore it. That's true.
So I could just grab my puzzle pieces, and then when I'm at my last set of 10,
that's true.
Day,
when you just have like a down
when you
moment.
Have a
yeah.
moment. Yeah, I mean, when I was at Anime Expo, I mean, I wasn't even. I don't give a shit about Find Me anymore. It takes too long to go through in that kind of scenario. I was going purely for puzzle pieces, and I could, you know, I could do all the puzzle pieces, and by the time I'd cleared them all out, there were like somewhere between like 4 and 7 more people at my gate. So I just closed it for 5 more minutes, and I was back at 10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love, love, love that they've changed the system of getting hats, though. I don't know if you guys have seen this. I think it's just with the most recent update. I don't even think you have to buy the new games, but maybe you do. But there's like a little shop now, and so in each of the games you get tickets. So instead of getting hats from the game specifically, you get little like tickets that then you go to the gift shop and you use the tickets to buy hats. And every day there's new hats. So it's like one day it'll be Classic Consoles Day, and so it's like you can buy an NES to put on your head or a Virtual Boy or something.
Is that including Find Me?
See,
I don't think
know.
It is. I think it's only the new games.
I think so. Well, I don't know. I haven't played Find Me in forever.
I think it said only the new games when I booted it up and ran through its little tutorial.
Yeah, so you would need the new games then. Or it's like classic Mario stuff and it's like you can get an 8-bit Mario to put on your head or a star or a piranha plant or something. You know, like it's really neat. And I love that you can choose what you want to buy every day with those tickets. And then to get the tickets, you kind of have to do like little things in each game. So like little accomplishments in each game to get the tickets. So it's kind of a cool system. If you're going to buy any of them, I would say MiiForce and Monster Manor are the two best.
The Ghost MiiForce one is looked great. The most interesting to me.
I love MiiForce. I mean, it's like playing R-Type with Miis. It's really awesome. Mm-hmm. I think it's actually kind of deep. It's a little short. There's only 12 levels. But you like street pass high scores. So you can like see if someone beat your high score on a level and then you can go back and play the level again and try to get a new high score and stuff like that. And it's pretty good. So, yeah, that's it for them. I don't really want to talk very much about them. Patrick, what did you have to talk about that we haven't talked about
yet? I was just
going
to talk briefly about Dempamen 2. Have any of you guys played Dempamen before?
No.
So there's not really a point of reference here, but...
I know you have to go to different Wi-Fi spots, right?
Yeah, which I drove me insane because I was sitting at home and I caught my first Dempamen by just, you hold up the 3DS, it uses the AR stuff where you just catch Dempamen flying around your house. but I couldn't find any more. I had only grabbed two, I think. So what I had to do, I had to go all the way out to my car, turn on my car radio, and then more appeared. It was the strangest thing to have to go out and just turn on my radio to get more Dempamen to finally appear.
Why your radio?
No idea. I looked online how to catch more Dempamen, and that's what someone said. Just go out to your car.
It must use the microphone to pick up like loud noises in the background or something.
I don't think that's
now.
It,
climb a tree in the front yard.
How
shake
else
out.
Would I know you were in your listening to the radio?
I can't catch any more in my house at all.
Even if you turn the radio up in your house,
if I turn off a TV, turn on a different radio, it won't pick up any more in my house.
What? How does it know it's in your car?
I have no clue.
So, wow.
I'm not buying this game. That's too freaky. It's like, this is an NSA plot, you guys. Don't do it.
But I'm not very far in the game. I'm maybe 2 hours, but I just fought this boss, and I thought this was the oddest thing. I immediately stopped after this because it just made me laugh too hard. It just shows how Japanese this game is. I'm fighting this large monkey, and he's in the middle of just beating me up. He's very strong and just hitting me and killing me. And on his one turn, he just it says King Ook slapped his butt, and then my little Dempamen, their response was got excited.
That sounds like something out of Earthbound.
I thought it was the strangest thing, and I figured I might as well bring that up because so odd. But yeah, Dempamen 2, that's what you'd get to expect.
People, are you enjoying it?
I mean, it's another RPG that's very not really slow moving, it's fast, but you don't get a lot done. To fight that boss, I had to spend an hour grinding enemies to get a certain item to drop so I could get that boss to appear.
Oh jeez.
So it's a lot of it's very good for sitting around watching TV and just kind of clicking the A button through the battles.
But you do have to go to the car and watch TV to get more characters.
yeah, exactly.
Fire up Netflix on your phone.
Yeah,
I think the game's designed,
because it came out of Japan, I think it's really designed for that, where you can just like say walk down a city street and Dempamen will just be flying around everywhere. The game's, I think the subtitle's like they came by wave, so I'm not sure if it's radio frequencies that it somehow detects.
Mm.
Oh,
that's what it is.
You should go to like next time you go to the movies, you should take it with you and see if like any pop up during a movie.
I'll do that.
You're not supposed to use electronic devices during a film, Scott. It's very rude.
Yeah. All right, Narc.
So yeah, that's Dempamen 2. I've also been playing Antichamber. It's this really cool game I picked up on the Steam summer sale. It was, I think, $6 when I grabbed it. I don't want to say too much about it because it's really something you have to experience rather than have explained to you. But basically, you're thrown into this very white environment where it's just hallways and everything's really kind of not right, where you, say, turn a corner and then turn right back around and there's just a whole different hallway right behind you. It really messes with your head a lot.
I've heard this game compared to Portal.
Yeah, I guess that'd be a good comparison.
I heard that too.
Pretty early on, you get this gun type mechanic where you can suck up blocks and spit them back out in different locations to open doors and stuff like that. But I found myself after about an hour, I just had to stop because nothing was making sense anymore.
Does it feel like the game has a set of rules that it follows, or is it all just seemingly very random?
It definitely has a set of rules because you come across the same stuff set up in the same situation over and over again. It was just laid out very, very smartly so that it felt random each and every time.
Okay.
So you can be going down the same pathway, but you go a different direction this time, and it somehow ties you back into where you were before, where you didn't see a pathway before. It's really smart, though, because if you ever get stuck, you can just hit escape, go back to the hub where you start, and you can select any room on the map that you previously visited. And you just kind of keep expanding and growing from that point. The game does give you a timer at the beginning. Right when you start, it says you have an hour and a half left. I won't spoil what happens when you reach the end of that timer, but it's pretty good.
Interesting. I want this again.
Yeah, I definitely think you should play it, but I'm not sure if its current price tag warrants the purchase.
How much is it normally?
I think it was like 14 or 15.
Oh, okay.
So I don't think it's worth that, but it's definitely something you should play for sure.
Cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, check the TalkBack thread. Patrick will post his Steam login information so we can all take turns logging into his Steam account and playing the anti-chamber. Thanks, Patrick.
Yep, no problem.
So Andy, what did you have for this week?
Oh, let's see. If you follow me on Twitter or Facebook, I suppose, for that matter, you've probably heard me mention several times over the past few months that I've had it up to here, and by here I'm referencing my forehead, with the NCAA football franchise, my dear franchise that I have bought every single game every single year dating back to like 2003, and after not playing that much of 12 or 13, I had online dynasties that kind of petered out, that didn't really gain a lot of traction, and I wasn't loving the offline dynasty mode the way I used to, just because once you played it online, it kind of feels like it's meant to be online. When you play it offline, it just kind of feels empty a little bit. Mm-hmm. Kind of like, you know, the differences between playing an online RPG and an offline RPG. It feels, once you're used to online RPGs, offline RPGs are hard to go back to from what I've been told. Anyway, like my complaints with NCAA 13 were mostly that like the menu systems, the game makes you spend so much time in the menus, like, because the dynasty mode is all about recruiting, and you have to go and list like 25 different fake high school kids and call them one by one and tell them that, you know, if you come to my school, you're going to be on TV a lot. Oh, wait, you don't care about TV. Well, sorry, I talked to you about that at all. That was a waste of my time. Let's talk about the facilities, or let's talk about my coaching integrity. Oh, let's go to the next fake high school kid. And it's just over and over again. And it's menus. It's all menus. And the infuriating thing is EA Sports apparently really sucks at coding menus, because there's like a whole lot of input lag. Like, every time you click a button in the menu, it takes like a quarter of a second for the game to respond, and it's stupid. And on top of that, they even extended the online dynasty mode to a website. You could go into your recruiting on the web, which is great. Except for the website menus are worse than the in-game menus. it's a friggin' website. It's text on a website. How hard is this? So, I've been bitching and moaning about this for a while, and I swore I would not buy NCAA 14 when it came out this year. So I've been playing NCAA Football 14. I did cave. I picked it up on PS3 just this past week. I'm not even sure what convinced me I should do it. I don't know.
You're in an abusive relationship.
I'm in a yeah, exactly. And a friend of mine was going to pick it up, and we're not even going to play online. But I think if he had faith that it would be an okay game, I decided to eventually take the plunge. And you know what? I'm actually happy that I did. I'm happy to report that while EA Sports has not necessarily gotten better at making menus, they've reduced the amount of time one needs to spend in the menus to get the same experience with Dynasty Mode. So now instead of having to call all of your fake high school students one by one to pitch them on like 10 different topics, all you have to do is allocate points to each of your prospective high college recruits, and it will just automatically take care of like the leveling up of the student's interest in your school. And if there are specific parts of your school that appeal to that particular student, then it'll just give you bonus points. You don't have to even think about it at all. It just takes care of itself, which is and the amount of points you allocate to a recruit stay from week to week. So you don't even have to adjust each recruit every week. It's the first time I've enjoyed the recruiting in a college football game. And probably ever since they made it part of the regular season. Recruiting used to be something that you would do between seasons in your dynasty. It was like a 5-week little mini game. And I always loved that. It was sort of this like change of pace from just playing the football game week to week. And then all of a sudden they made it part of the weekly regime. So every time you played a game of football,
Andy, recruiting is 365 days a year.
Yeah, but this is a video game. I have to want to play it.
I think it's crazy that they put all this recruiting shit in this game. First of all, I think I love college football. Like, I love college football about as much as you can love college football. But I find the whole obsession over the high school recruiting process kind of disgusting.
Yeah, it really, really is.
It's really weird that, like, grown men are spending this much time talking about the lives of 16-year-olds.
And when that 16-year-old inevitably changes his mind about wanting to come to the school that you cheer for,
oh yeah,
like
you crush him.
You talk. There was a player that was going to commit to Nebraska to play quarterback. Josh Freeman. He actually plays quarterback for the Buccaneers now. And he was going to come play for I think Frank Solich. And then Frank Solich got fired, and they hired Bill Callahan. Of course, that's the epic failure of Nebraska football. If you pay any attention to college football, you've heard the name Bill Callahan as an insult at some point. Anyway, Josh Freeman decided to decommit to Nebraska via text message to the coach. And he went to play for their rival one state to the south at Kansas State. So he played against Nebraska every year for 4 years. And you could not believe the nasty things people would say to and about him every time Nebraska played him year after year. And he's like, dude, this is just a kid. And like, I don't particularly like the kid because he was kind of an ass, but still, like, still,
I can't blame him. His coach left. You get recruited by the coach. You go where the coach goes. If the coach leaves, you can go somewhere else.
Yeah. Anyway, so the point is that they actually made recruiting fun for the first time in a long time. And I can't think of the last time that after I advanced a week in my dynasty, I actually did the recruiting before I play the game. Usually the recruiting was just the thing I like had to do before I would advance to get to the next week because it had to be done or the computer would just recruit automatically and very poorly for you. But now I'm actually really enjoying doing the recruiting. It's simple, and it doesn't really lose any of what you had before in terms of complexity. It's just all taken care of for you, which is great because EA hasn't gotten any better at making menus. the whole UI of the game still feels really just not well thought out. Like they have a lot of menu screens where there's multiple ways to view the information, and the way you view it is by a drop-down, and the drop-down is activated by like holding L2, but a lot of times there's only two options in that drop-down. So instead of just selecting between one or two of them, like hitting L2 to switch between the two views, you still have to hold L2 and select the other option in the drop-down. It just feels like they never bothered to get anybody who knows how to program a damn UI, which is a shame.
I just think they don't have the time.
It's a shame because
they put this fucker out every year.
The football game is fine. It's always been good. Like, I've never had a problem with the way the football game plays. I know them. They always tout these specific changes from year to year, and this year does actually have a new physics engine, which is a pretty big deal. But for the most part, the game hasn't drastically changed in a long time. But every year, whenever they announce the new football game, they don't spend any time talking about how the UI is better or the dynasty mode has gotten simpler. They always talk about like the awareness on the field of the players or improved running game.
It's
or whatever.
Always some blast processing bullshit.
They're fixing what ain't broke. Every year they go out of their way to advertise that they're fixing the part of the game that's not really broken. And the part of the game that is like laughably broken, they never touch. Well, this year they actually touched it a little bit, and I'm happy that I bought the game. I'm not doing particularly well. I get worse at this game every year because it gets more realistic and I'm not that good at it. And every year that it gets more realistic, I get worse at it. I'm like sitting at like 7-3 in my dynasty on the default difficulty level with like two consecutive losses right now. So I don't know. I still like it though, and I'm happy I bought it. I don't know if I'm gonna play this year online or not. I don't know of anybody who's planning on buying the PS3 version of the game. And even if they did, every time I start an online dynasty, inevitably it never goes anywhere after like a week. So
people are too busy.
Yeah, I guess.
I played 13 for a little bit, and I toyed around with getting this one, but I know I'm not going to get my money out of it. So
yeah, and that's why I hadn't planned on buying this one, because I thought there wasn't a chance I would get any money out of it, and or get my money out of it. So just to be absolutely sure that I would get my money out of it, I bought it digitally.
Well, now you can say you bought the last NCAA football game ever, because next year it's just going to be college football 2015. The name thing still bugs me. This is NCAA 14. Why is there no playoff system in it this year then?
I'm going to bet this is going – next year is going to be ESPN College Game Day 2015.
I wish they would just – all they need to do is drop the year for 1 year, and then the next year they can start using the proper year. Did they get themselves in this situation where the sports games are all a year ahead of the – it's like how 2014 cars come out in September like of 2013. What's going on? That's not when it came out. Why are you calling it that?
Well, I've heard a lot of people say that the whole NCAA thing is going to make it so they're not going to make this game anymore, and that's silly.
No, they're still making it.
It's a huge seller. I think they're going to use the ESPN branding going forward.
I wouldn't be surprised. They already have ESPN branding all over it.
The branding is all over the game. ESPN has a very strong college football brand, College Game Day. It's the most like associated news/opinion show there is with college football, so why not? And you have the guys that are on the show as your play-by-play team, so why not just make that your game title? I would be kind of shocked if they didn't do that next year, but
yeah.
Anyway, NCAA 14. I'm happy I bought it. I am a absolute hypocrite for saying I wouldn't buy it. I probably should have known better. We'll see if I buy it next year when they're clearly putting all their energy into a console that I probably won't own. Next year is a whole new ball game. So to speak, I guess.
Har, 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 har.
The other thing that I've been playing, I played a good few hours of Sonic in All-Stars Racing Transformed last weekend, which I hadn't really touched all that much since I got my, since I picked it up shortly after Wii U launch. I know a lot of people have spoken very highly of this game, and I was never quite able to enjoy it the way a lot of other people seem to be enjoying it. And I think larger that boils down to just not being that good at it. Once again, I'm getting worse at video games as I get older, apparently. One of the things that I kind of hadn't really grasped onto was that you level up characters, and the more you level up characters, the more different like handlings of each cart you get, which is great because it allows you to basically unlock carts that suit your playstyle better. And I think part of my problem was I was hopping from character to character because that's what you do in a kart racing game. But Sonic and All-Stars Racing seems to reward you for just sticking to the same car for a good while and unlocking all of the different playstyles for that car. So I focused on the crazy taxi dude, and I also figured out how to unlock characters, which surprisingly had eluded me, even though I had already played through the first of the cups in the World Tour. I didn't realize that you just had to find them on the map and click a button. but it's a lot of fun. I'm still not convinced this game handles as well as Mario Kart. I know a lot of people think this is a better game than Mario Kart, and I definitely think the World Tour mode is a great change of pace from what Mario Kart's delivered to us time and time again. I don't think this game handles as well as Mario Kart. I don't like the idea that – and maybe I haven't played enough, but it doesn't seem like you can customize your kart at all in terms of appearance. Like, it's just – like, you don't get to, like, a purple taxi and the crazy taxi guy. You just get a different handling taxi. Like, maybe it turns better or goes faster, but it never – gets like flames on the side or something. I kind of like in Mario Kart being able to pick what your kart looks like. So, I don't know. I really feel like Mario Kart could learn a few things from Sonic, and Sonic could learn a few things from Mario Kart, and maybe someday in the future these two developers will team up and make a really awesome kart game instead of just like a couple of really, really good ones. But I'm really enjoying it. I'm going to go back to it, I think. I've been playing it mostly on off-TV mode. I really appreciate that it has that. I feel like that should be mandated across all Wii U titles at this point, but I know it won't be. But yeah,
it almost is. Almost everything has it.
I really wish Lego City did. There's no good reason for Lego City to not have it. I really wish that Zombie U had it, because I want to play through Zombie U again, and I just don't use the TV as often as I play.
I think Zombie U is a game that integrated the gamepad, though.
It did, but
it's so essential to the game.
But there's no way there's no reason you couldn't do that with Picture in Picture if you really wanted to. And when they inevitably port that game to the 360 and PS3, which actually at this point may not happen, but I thought it was inevitable for a few months there. That's how I would assume they would do it. They would just do Picture in Picture and call it at that. That's essentially what they do in I had an example lined up and I've lost it. The Last of Us. In The Last of Us, you do a lot of rifling through your backpack and crafting new items on the fly, and you do that in the game. There's a menu overlay over the screen, but you still see what's happening around your main character as he does it, and you can be attacked in the middle of it. So it's not that hard to pull off. They chose to use the second screen to make it feel like you were the game hadn't really stopped while you were doing it. I think it was a particularly good way to be immersive in Zombie U, but I mean, I don't think that's worth sacrificing off TV play for. Personally, and if they had off TV play, I probably would have already played through Zombie U again.
Yeah, if porting Zombie U to PS3 and 360 meant we got a sequel, I would sign off on that.
Yeah,
right now
it really sucks that it seems that game is DOA, and I think they were talking about this on RFN last week or maybe the week before, where they were saying that the game will certainly become profitable eventually, assuming that they keep it on store shelves and on the eShop, and that maybe over time they'll change their tune. But the possibility that what I think Scott and I both would agree to be the best game on the platform right now not getting a sequel is just makes me sick.
It kills me. I know. It sucks. I hate to go back to NCAA 14, but Andy, I don't think you talked at all about the mini game where you go meet with instructors and convince them to raise kids' grades so they can play. What's that like?
I wish I had a really good joke to follow up on your excellent joke, but unfortunately, I don't. It's okay. Great. Can I?
You press the shoulder button. Is there a game where you can sell your memorabilia for money?
Oh,
are there any fake?
There would be great if there was an NCAA sanctioned minigame, because this is the last year that they're doing NCAA. There's no reason not to throw them under the bridge this time. Patch it in.
I kind of feel like a lot of Penn State fans will buy this game simply because there are no sanctions in video game land. Although Penn State is 1-9 in my season right now, they are miserable. So I'm curious, and if you look at their skill ratings, they're not that bad. So clearly there's something going on.
There's some kind of computerized bias against Penn State in the game.
There must be. I'm playing them next, so we'll see if I can break my 2-game losing streak against a team that's 1-8 or 1-9. Can I say, going back to NCAA for real for a second, I am super thrilled that they included the tutorial modes this time. So Madden for years has had this mini camp mode where you go through and do all of these very specific tutorials for passing and running and different kinds of passing and different kinds of running and defense and playing defensive line and playing the secondary. And it's a great way to actually figure out how to play the game. And for the first time, I'm not sure how long they actually included that in NCAA again. And it ties into the ultimate team mode, which I haven't really looked at all, but you get rewards for getting gold medals in each of these tutorials, which is friggin' fantastic, especially because I play with Nebraska, who has a very talented running quarterback, but I've been playing this game for 3 years, and this is his last year, and I've never been able to run with him before because I've never quite understood how the option game works. And one of the things NCAA 14 does that's fantastic if you have a running quarterback is it actually tells you which defensive player to look at to make your read on the option play, which may not mean anything to you guys. I know maybe it will to Mike, but it allows you to actually figure out how to run the option, because before it was kind of a guessing game to figure out which defensive player you wanted to look at to figure out if you should keep the ball or pitch the ball. And now they actually tell you very specifically, this is the guy that you need to watch, and it makes running the option so much easier. And I'm playing these tutorial modes over and over again, and I'm actually getting good at the read option game.
You're making me want to buy this game, Andy.
It's fantastic. I'm starting to get like 100-yard games with my quarterback, which is what actually happens with this kid on the field. But I've never been able to do that with an NCAA football game before because the option game was always a mystery to me. And now they actually...
Game is a mystery to me. Like, I understand the rules of football, and I can watch a football game, understand exactly what is going on completely, but I don't really understand play calling.
You might...
Like, I understand the very basics of play calling. So when I get into the NCAA video game, I don't know enough. Like, I know enough to watch football. I don't know enough to play fake football.
I'm not sure that they really help you with trying to figure out which plays to call, but the tutorial mode will tell you exactly, like, how to execute the plays that are there, which is...
Yeah, and that's the other problem, is the freaking control scheme of this game is, like, a nightmare to learn.
It's not easy.
It's so complicated.
It's nice that I've been playing for so long, because it's been an evolution for me.
The controls change, like, on the fly. Like, when you're doing this thing... all of the buttons do this, but when you're doing this other thing that happens 2 seconds later, every button has a different command.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy.
It used to be, back in the early days, like the turbo button would literally change if you were playing offense or defense, which is crazy. They don't even have a turbo button anymore. Well, actually, no, that's not entirely true. They got rid of the turbo button a couple years ago, and now they brought it back, but you have a... it's kind of like the turbo mode from NBA Jam back in the day, where, like, you have a bar that expires. So it's like, it's an acceleration burst, and then eventually the burst goes away. So, I don't know.
Can you still press the button to make the stadium really loud? That was always my favorite part.
Yeah, your defensive players, like, raise their arms up and try to get the
that's the best part
it.
Of the whole game.
It's especially fun if you do that when you're in an opposing stadium, because then the crowd gets really, really quiet. NCAA football. You should at least try it. Try the
I download the demo every year, and then I'm like, that's about as much NCAA football as I need this year.
If you can come across a disc copy of the game, play the tutorial mode for a little while, because I think that might be what convinces you that you might actually play it more. The tutorial mode helps you learn what to do in the game.
Maybe I'll pick it up after the season's over, and I'm like, I need my football fix, and it's on sale.
There you go. Well, if you do that and you get it on PS3, we should do an online dynasty.
If I get it, I will get it on PS3, because I don't pay for Xbox Live.
Yeah, me either. Screw that. PS Plus for life.
All right. Well, that will do it for this week's What We've Been Playing. Mike, Patrick, Andy, thank you for being here.
Yep.
If anyone out there has questions or comments about the games we talked about, feel free to post in the TalkBack thread or emails at connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. And that'll do it. So we'll see you guys next time.
Thank you.
See you.
Adios. Bye.
Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Don't forget to send your listener mail questions to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com, and if you've got a chance, please rate and review the show on iTunes.